This is F1 Debrief. We went to McLaren and I touched Lewis's car. Coming up today, we discuss shark attacks, ride height loopholes, way out wing mirrors, a slow Sauber driver, and Mother's Day celebrations.
Back to your tweets. This one, can we give a shout out for Amy at the Clark Grandstand? This is from the our chums at Side podcast. Paul at Turn One and Jeremy and Pamela at Fangio. All the stands are named after famous drivers here. So hello to you all, anyone with a Kangaroo TV.
And there started the best weekend ever.
Really? The best ever?
I've had such a good weekend. Formula One is back, baby!
Oh, except it was back 2 weeks ago.
It's back proper. This is the way it should be.
Good week, bad week.
It's been a good week for Mark Webber, who is making the step to driver management, supporting Mitchell Evans, a Kiwi racing sensation, allegedly. We presume he will gain a spot in Webber's GP3 team at some point.
I see he's got plans. Webber has plans for the future. I like what he's doing, and it's good to see that he's supporting the young guys.
It's been a bad week for Paul de Resta, who arrived in Australia for the first time to take part in his first ever F1 free practice. He turned up to the beach for a PR event and within about 10 minutes of getting there was confronted with a shark. He said it was quite worrying.
He was attacked by a shark!
Well, no, he just saw one.
It looked at him funny.
It's been a good week for the GPDA as they have new people in charge now. It used to be Alonso, Webber and De La Rosa, who have all stepped down. Heidfeld is now the chairman, with Vettel and Massa as directors. Apparently everyone was a bit too busy with their day jobs to be chairman, so it falls to a test driver.
So now that De La Rosa has a drive...
He doesn't want to do it anymore.
He's stepping down.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work then? That makes no sense whatsoever. It's a Grand Prix Drivers Association, not a Grand Prix Test Drivers Association or a Grand Prix Friday Drivers Association. How busy can they possibly be?
It's been a bad week for entertainment as the BBC are tracking a car part from Albert Park to the Williams factory in Grove and then out to Malaysia. Fun, fun, fun. I'm so glad this is what my licence fee is going towards.
Am I wrong that I'm in the minority that I'm actually looking forward to this?
Big surprise.
It does sound quite interesting. You know, a used part, what happens to it, how it gets shipped over, it's going to travel the globe. I'm not selling it to you, am I?
News and views.
The news is all about loopholes at the moment, isn't it? All about regulations.
It's the beginning of the season. That's what happens. New
what
regulations.
Happened last year?
A new year. Well, it's what happens every year. New regulations, new rules, new parts. People have had the off season to spend time thinking up new and innovative solutions to F1's greatest problems, that being making cars fast and reliable. And in order to do that, they found the most inane of loopholes in the world to try and exploit, the kind of things that the everyday Formula One fan will find incredibly tedious, but I find quite exciting.
The F-duct has already been confirmed as legal. I think we talked about that already.
McLaren's F-duct.
Yes.
Yes. They brought it to the first race of the season. Love the idea, love the concept. I do worry that maybe it's going to hand them an advantage that no one else can catch up with, but Sauber have come up and they're trying to match McLaren.
Well, in the last podcast, you said that it must have taken McLaren at least 2 years, several years, to make this thing. And in about 2 weeks, Sauber said, hey, we've got one.
So a couple of things come to mind here. Firstly, it cannot be a massive coincidence that ex-McLaren test driver Pedro De La Rosa turns up at Sauber. Sauber are the first team to debut an F-duct. I do not believe that is a fluke. The question is, how much does Pedro know? I think you almost need a jingle for this.
Well,
because I'll tell you what, you watch throughout the year, McLaren may rue the day they let Pedro go, much like they did when they let Wirtz leave, because that guy has taken an awful lot of McLaren internal knowledge with him to a rival team, and we've already seen evidence of that appearing on rival cars.
It's different though, isn't it? Because it's stuck out on the side, the big hole.
Well, the team are limited by the homologated cockpit, so they can't copy McLaren exactly. However, the concept looks very similar. I suspect that Pedro is the guy who's been doing all the legwork on the F-duct. I don't for one second believe that it was Heikki Kovalainen who was given input into what made the F-duct work. I don't believe that for one second. I don't believe Lewis Hamilton had time to worry about the F-duct.
You big meanie.
I think that Pedro De La Rosa did the groundwork for that thing. I think he knows exactly how it works. And even though he's denying that he's passing information on to BMW Sauber, I just don't believe in coincidences that great.
Which is fine, but it doesn't explain how Mercedes think they're ready to bring one on board as well.
We know that there's a lot of movement amongst personnel within F1 teams, and possibly rival teams have been aware of McLaren's secret innovations well in advance of the debut, and that's why there has been no huge outcry at this thing arriving at the track, because the teams internally have all been aware of it through various means. And they've already been working on their own secret systems, so they may not need 2 years to get up to speed because they might have identical systems in the works.
Well, they must have been aware of it because they were all complaining about it.
Well, they only complained about it. They saw it in testing. I assumed that McLaren turned up with it in testing, and then they arrived at the first race with it. And suddenly all the team principals sort of slapped themselves on the forehead and went, "No, I can't believe we didn't think of this." Whereas now I'm kind of assuming actually they've all probably got their internal development systems working on it, except possibly for Renault, who made a huge outcry at the last race and complained continuously almost throughout the entire weekend. So possibly Renault haven't got an answer to this F-duck, but you may see more than just Sauber arriving with them at the next race. Especially when we get back to Europe, that's when the new parts will be thrown on the car, and maybe they're just waiting to see what happens before then.
I imagine one team that won't be concentrating on the F-duct thing is Virgin, because they have a whole new fuel tank to build.
Yes. What are your thoughts on this one?
Well, it's a bit small. They were a bit silly.
Yes. The rumour...
Their computer got it wrong.
Word about the undersized fuel tank, leaked at the very beginning of this year. The first I heard about it was following the Autosport Awards in London, which it must have been Christmas, New Year time. So that was the first time anybody anywhere mentioned it. And since then, speculation has been rife up and down the paddock as to who it was that designed a fuel tank not large enough, not capable of finishing a race, which is something of an oversight. And since that point, it looks like Virgin are the first to put their hands up and admit that they've made a mistake. They've gone to the FIA, they've said, "We can't finish a race. We need to re-homologate our chassis, our cockpit. We need to rebuild our car, redesign it with a bigger fuel tank so that we may have a chance of competing this season." There may be other teams who have to do the same.
Well, if they have races like today in which they don't actually finish, then it's not going to be a problem. And if they have races where there's lots of safety cars, they'll probably save fuel. But they're not going to build their new car until about Europe. So what if they can't finish a race until then?
That's a very likely possibility, apart from the fact that their reliability is such that the chances of finishing either Malaysia or China are slim at best. The worst thing that could happen, I guess, is they could lean out the engine and run it. They could run very, very slow laps.
They'd come last. What a surprise.
They would. Well, to be honest with you, I think right now that team would take last. Because what have they got now? 4 DNFs. It's not a great showing.
At least they're consistent.
I'll tell you what's even worse for Virgin is that until this weekend, they were the fastest new team, if not the most reliable new team. Lotus beat them fair and square. They beat them in qualifying and they beat them in the race. And so Virgin are no longer the fastest. HRT finished the race and
even
Virgin didn't.
Chandock managed to finish the race when neither of them did.
So what do Virgin have exactly? They have an unreliable, slow, and
car that can't finish a race.
It's going well for Virgin, I think. Virgin Racing, stand up. You should be proud of your efforts. It's better than US F1. All I can say.
I did like there was an interview with Richard Branson and they said, "So do you think this will be harming your brand?" And
yep.
He was like, "No.
Come on.
Yeah, right."
Goodness me. That's an oversight of gargantuan proportions. Clearly, as we said, somewhere along the line, the rumour has been around for now nearly 4 months. There's been plenty of time to stand up and say, "Hold on, we've made a mistake and we need to make a change." Not arriving at the first race.
Other loophole-y stuff includes the...
I do like your technical. Yeah. Christine gets technical.
I should have my own segment.
You do need... Yeah, you need a jingle for that.
Yeah. The ride height adjustableness.
Right.
This is the extent of my knowledge.
Goodness me.
This can be my section. I can explain it.
Okay.
So you start, the car is heavy, and so that lowers the ride height. And by the end of the race, your car is light, so that raises it. So somewhere in between, you want to change it. Ferrari do it with a hand crank, and Red Bull do it with some kind of special gas.
Wow.
And you think it's illegal. Go me.
Hold on. I don't think it's illegal. I didn't say that. But
you don't approve.
Yes. Well, here's the thing, right? So, okay, you've covered
you're
everything.
You're undecided?
In the same way that I think the F-Duct is genius, but at the same time, borderline has the ability to ruin the entire season for us, I think that what Red Bull are doing with their car is genius, and hats off to Mr. Adrian Newey for coming up with a system that will allow the ride height of the Red Bull to be adjusted on the fly as fuel gets burned. That's good. That's engineering acumen. I like what he's done. However, if that car ever finishes a race, it does have the ability to run off with the season, depending on whether other teams can catch up.
You mean it's not a coincidence that Ferrari and Red Bull are at the front?
No, not at all. No, no. In qualifying, Red Bull have the legs on everybody else. And for the next two races, if qualifying is dry, there's no one going to be able to touch Vettel. Good for Red Bull. I think it was Ted Kravis who first alerted us to this in FP1 in Bahrain. He said that Red Bull were doing something interesting and he couldn't work out what it was, because they've somehow found a way of lowering their car's ride height mid-race without touching the car. And as you pointed out in your introduction, your technical introduction, Ferrari are also doing this, but they're doing it in a manual way, which is more obvious, and that's less dodgy, I guess, because you can see what they're doing. And they have a limited amount of scope for adjustment, more than the rest of the grid, but not as much as Red Bull. You going to get any more technical on us, or are we done for that?
Well, the only other bit of regulation news we have is wing mirrors. McLaren turned up this weekend with some new out wide ones.
Out wide?
Yep, and then they took them off again.
They were trialling. They had at one point 4 wing mirrors on the car. They had the usual wing mirror positions, which would be close to the driver on the monocoque. And they also had the wider mirrors, which sit on
double the chance to be able to see.
It would be awesome if they drove with them. I would be so impressed if that car went out with 4 wing mirrors. I'm pretty sure it's illegal, but that would look brilliant. For whatever reason, the team decided not to run with the wider choice of mirrors. There was a rumor that the FIA asked the team to remove them. But I don't know if that's been substantiated or whether the team just decided actually the closer ones were fine for the moment.
We don't know what's going on, because then the GPDA are annoyed that people can't see. Is that to do with the mirrors as well?
Is this the part-time GPDA or the test drivers, or which part of the GPDA is annoyed?
Not sure, actually. And Barrichello was particularly outspoken about it as well, and I don't know if he is anything of major influence.
He's a driver,
in
he probably hasn't got much time.
No.
What did Barrichello have to say about it?
Well, he said they want to put a proposal forward for the mirrors to go back where they belong, which is the inside, not out wide.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "We have all been quite honest and said that we have difficulties apart from Lewis. The problem for me is we are driven by the aerodynamics, but the mirrors situated on the aero stuff vibrate." Now, two things. Firstly, I like that Barrichello says aero stuff. That makes me feel better. And secondly, why is he singling out Lewis?
What did he say again, Lewis?
We've all been quite honest and said that we have difficulties apart from Lewis.
Well, that's interesting.
They have a cat fight.
Well, it's slightly peculiar, because Lewis is the guy with the wing mirrors in the right place. So why is he arguing they should be on the outside?
I don't know.
None of that makes any sense at all. I'm quite confused by what's going on there. In terms of, I guess, the reason this has come to light is because there are more cars on the grid. And especially in Melbourne, where the circuit isn't that long and there's a good chance that you're going to get held up by another car in qualifying, a lot of drivers have been taking issue with slow cars in front of them not moving out of the way because they can't see oncoming traffic faster than in their wing mirrors.
But I don't think they've ever been able to see anyway. It doesn't matter where their wing mirrors are. They're too wobbly and they're too small.
They should be. The size of the wing mirrors should be bigger. Full stop. They should be restricted to being on the cockpit near the driver, where he's got a better chance of seeing them.
Or they could have a camera out the back and the little dashboard thing in the steering
wheel. Like Knight Rider?
I was going to say like in the games that you get. But Knight Rider will do.
Yes, okay. So you want a rear-facing camera on all Formula 1 cars so you can see what's behind you.
It'd be better than them wing mirrors, no matter where they are.
Do you know what? It's ridiculous as that concept sounds to me. I cannot find a justifiable reason to argue against it. Where would you put the TV screen?
In the dashboard thing somewhere.
On the steering wheel, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay. That sounds quite expensive, but quite fun.
Well, the steering wheels are expensive anyway, so that wouldn't make too much difference, would it?
I've got no argument against this. Somebody in the comments, I'm sure somebody will give us some feedback upon listening to the show as to why you can't have a rear-facing camera.
It doesn't work.
That sounds ridiculous. There must be. I'm sure there's some other motorsport series that already does it that we're just not aware of. That's genius. Okay, I'm going to go with your obscenely untechnical solution to this. And would you just get rid of wing mirrors altogether?
Well, yeah, you don't need them then, do you?
What if the TV or the camera failed? What if somebody hit you from behind and damaged your camera?
If someone's hit you from behind, then you haven't used your camera properly.
Unless your name's Mark Webber.
The race.
Well, where do you start with a race like that, eh?
Well, that's
apparently
a good
it was
question.
The best one ever. Best weekend ever.
I have had such a good time. I was going to say, even if the race was rubbish, as we heard at the very top of the show, there Melbourne is a very accessible race for Formula One fans, and there were a number of fans from the Side Podcast comments. They were at the race, and they have been giving us unprecedented access.
Lots of pictures,
to Formula One.
Lots of twitpics, tweets, photographs of each other and drivers, and excellent stuff.
Brilliant stories from the paddock. It sounds like if you go to Melbourne, there's a great chance you're going to get up close and personal with every member of the Formula One paddock, because they were meeting drivers and they were meeting team managers and mechanics and commentators and all sorts of stuff.
We have had a voicemail from Jeremy, who was there, and I think he had a really good day, had a couple of drinks, enjoyed himself a bit too much, left us a voicemail.
Hello, Side Podcast. This is the Friends of Side Podcast group in Australia. We've just been to the Melbourne Grand Prix on Friday.
Practice day.
Yeah. I'm Jeremy. We also have...
Amy.
We also have...
Paul.
And we have the professional lurker...
Pamela.
Yay for Pamela. She's going to comment now for sure. We are all...
For sure.
We are all best of friends now. We have so many stories to tell, but probably the biggest one we want to tell you about is that at 10 o'clock last night, so Thursday night, Amy and I were having dinner. She had a phone call, a missed phone call from Brian at McLaren in the UK. We called back straight away, and he let us know that we had a McLaren pit tour today. Amy, I'm just including myself. Amy won a pit tour for her and a friend. I'm a McLaren member, so she invited me straight away. But we were really lucky enough to sneak both Pamela and Paul in with us. On the way through the paddock, we saw Christian Horner, Sir Jackie Stewart and Martin Brundle all having a conversation. We went into the pits. We saw Jensen. We saw Lewis. We took many photos.
Two minutes before session started,
we took many photos. I actually got a photo of me touching Lewis's car. So big go, Lewis. on the way out, we saw many
Martin
people.
Whitmarsh. I saw Whitmarsh.
Amy saw Martin Whitmarsh.
I saw Christian Horner again.
Pamela, Christian Horner.
And
Rob. The biggest one was Rob. I did attempt to take a video of Rob, but he really didn't want to speak to me.
He really doesn't like that.
No, but he does remember Felipe Baby. He did kind of acknowledge that.
He waved his hand, but it was 2 minutes before practice, so it was a bit busy.
Yeah, we think he was concentrating on other things.
The visit to McLaren?
Yeah, we went to McLaren and I touched Lewis's car.
And they
car.
Were so lovely. I would like to say thank you to the lovely McLaren man, because he was like my new best friend. He was
so
friendly.
And we have taken some photos of Ted through many safety fences, so it may not look like Ted, but it is. All right, bye.
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 It sounds like somebody has been up to mischief.
Yeah.
Doesn't it get you get that impression?
Jeremy did say
people have been causing problems.
Jeremy did say that as he had touched Lewis's car, he thought maybe he was responsible for the problems in qualifying.
Ah, he could have jinxed it.
Yeah,
it could be that. It's brilliant. I saw a great picture. I think it was Amy with Davison and Crofty.
Yep.
In a bar, which is just brilliant. I love the fact that they had such a good time. It sounds like they were having a riot. I love that McLaren were so open and accessible that they'd invite fans from the fan club. And then you could still sneak in more people just by dressing them in McLaren clothing and saying, yeah, they're with us. Come on in.
Before we get to the actual race, we were talking about Pedro de la Rosa earlier and how he holds the key to all the McLaren secrets, but he also holds the key to holding everyone up in practice.
What the blazes was that guy up to?
Now, it's fair to say Sauber isn't the fastest car on the grid.
Agreed.
But it's also not the slowest, and I don't understand why he was in everyone's way. I mean, this guy was in Buemi's way. Now, that doesn't happen every day.
Yeah.
And he was reprimanded by the stewards as well.
Deservedly. So, bizarrely, he somehow, at the end of, was it free practice? I forget which free practice session it was, but the checker flag came out, and he went past it, so he was obviously doing his in-lap. During whatever in-lap he was doing, he managed to hold up another three cars. He got so confused by the three cars, trying to keep out of the way of the three cars he was already in the way of, that he somehow managed to pass the pits and do another tour of the circuit. Now, I'm pretty sure that must be illegal. There must be a regulation to stop drivers just going round and round all afternoon.
Keep going.
Well, he could have gone till he ran out of fuel. It was amazing he ever got back to the pits. I don't know what he was doing. He was in all of the wrong places at all of the wrong times.
It wasn't all his... I mean, it was all his fault, really. But I was going to say that traffic really was a problem this weekend.
It was expected to be. There was a rumour that the bizarre decision that the Bahrain organisers made to extend the racetrack, you know, they added another five or six corners and basically ruined any hope of a race there. The reason that they did that was that there was a huge fear that backmarkers would ruin other racers' days, and therefore an extended track would probably work in everybody's favour, and it didn't. And in Albert Park, obviously you have a short racetrack and people would spend all day tripping over each other.
Normally, qualifying is the best part of the weekend, but this weekend it really wasn't. And I don't think that's just because the race was exceptional, but also because, I mean, it came to a muted ending when Vettel only had himself to beat.
Yes.
And he couldn't beat his own time. All the regular people fell out of the first qualifying session. And the only exciting thing in Q2 was that Hamilton was so far down.
It was a surprise. I will say that I was impressed by Jenson Button this weekend in qualifying and again in the race. I think he did a fine job, and I was surprised after his race in Bahrain. I didn't hold out much hope for him getting to grips with the McLaren as quickly as he did, but in qualifying, he got the very best out of that car. Essentially, Jenson Button offered the only excitement, I think, through qualifying. It's a shame, because last year it was so good, and this year it's okay. It's not brilliant. It's not awful. It's just average.
On to the race, then. It started out a little bit wet.
Brilliant. Love the rain.
Well,
always provide some interesting starts. The best thing about the rain at this race was it didn't force a safety car start and a processional.
It wasn't too bad at all. It just meant they had to start on intermediate tyres and
which
then
is ideal.
Make the call to change back to the other ones. And that's where all the strategy comes in.
Yes, because eventually the track would dry out because the rain wasn't set to hold. So at some point in the race, you knew there would be a tyre change. And the only question was when to make that change. One thing I should say is that I thought Alonso made a rod for his own back on that start. He had an awful start off the line. His reasoning was that he got caught on the white line, had no traction because...
Slippery white line.
However, if you watch the replay of the start, you can see that he is completely out of position and the only car sitting on those white lines. Now, he chose to put his car there and he basically screwed his own start, which ended up with him sitting at the back of the field, which was not a smart move from the guy who won the race 2 weeks ago.
No, but he did say that he thought he could win it from the back. Well.
Yeah.
I mean, he did pretty well.
He did very well, considering he was basically at the back of the field after corner one. I'd written off his chances. And unfortunately, the first corner, he did tangle with Schumacher, who had to pit for a new nose.
Yeah.
He also came out behind Alonso. He didn't move through the field with quite the same aggression that Alonso managed.
No, well, I thought it was quite interesting because they were moving through together, going past the new teams mostly. And then at some point, Schumacher just got stuck and Alonso kept on going and Schumacher was stuck behind Alguersuari and he couldn't get past.
It was a bizarre drive from Michael Schumacher. Can't really put my finger on it. It could be the car. It could just be that Alonso had the best car on the field.
I saw a couple of people discussing the Schumacher thing and some of them were saying, well, this is his chance to prove how great he is going through the field. And then other people were saying he's never going to get anywhere because he usually overtakes in the pit lane and there isn't that option.
Well, that's true. But Michael Schumacher, wet race, out of position. Those three factors usually spell bad news for everybody else on the track.
Because he has sharp elbows.
Michael Schumacher has sharp elbows, but he didn't. They were blunted at this race. I am so surprised at how his season is going this far. It's not looking good. I'm disappointed in the aggression. And I dislike a rubbish Michael Schumacher more than I dislike the usual Michael Schumacher.
Well, what I dislike most is that he's not particularly shining, but then he's like, yeah, I'm fine about it, really, you know?
Well, that's more annoying.
Like, Alonso did get stuck eventually behind his teammate.
Yes. That was like watching the Massa of old try and keep his car under control. Every line, every corner was a different line. Every corner he took wide and he took wrong, but somehow still managed to keep it together.
It was weird because it's like it was before Rob got his hands on him, but then at the same time, Rob was talking him through all the corners.
He was, which you like. You like Rob on the radio.
Well, of course.
This is how you're supposed to drive. Massa. This is how you should be doing it. Get a grip on yourself.
Yeah.
I'm impressed that Massa didn't lose out to Alonso. That was surprising. I'm surprised that Fernando didn't try and make more of the opportunity.
Well, I don't think he could get past. I think he would have if he could have.
That's true. Kubica was driving a great race.
Well, yeah, that's a slow Renault, isn't it?
That is. This is not a race-winning Renault, and to end up in second place is a fantastic drive from Kubica, and all credit to him because, I mean, he drove defensive basically from the word go. He had a great start, and after that, it was just defensive all the way. What it really showed for me, what all this really says, is that track position is everything now. Because once the situation got shaken out, you saw that Lewis came into the pits and for fresh tyres, and even though he had fresher tyres and was faster and could make up, he made up all of the time he lost by coming in for the tyres, he still couldn't make up track position. And Ferraris, who basically decided not to pit, they stuck out on the long strategy, they looked after the tyres, they were really slow. Once you catch up to the main pack, you've got nowhere to go. You've got no means of overtaking because you've then shot your tyres. So what do you do? Come back in for more tyres. That once you're in a track, once you've got track position, just don't pit. That's it. You've done your pit stop. You've got your second place, and just drive a really, really, really wide car for 60 laps.
Well, that is the exact difference between what happened to Button and what happened to Hamilton. Now, we know Button made the good call to come in for wet tyres before everyone else, and that allowed him to jump up the field a little bit. But then he didn't come in.
A little bit to the front.
Yeah. Then he didn't come in again, did he? Whereas no. Hamilton did come in again and was quite vocal about it being the wrong choice afterwards.
I think defensive driving is going to have to be the key this season. The best defensive drivers are going to be the guys who bag the points. Because the wider your car and the less mistakes you make, the better your finishing position will be. A couple of things to say about this, because it was the key to the race. Jenson Button's call to come in for tyres earlier than everybody else.
And it was his call as well, wasn't it? He made that decision.
I love this about. We talked last the last show about how geeky we are now with all our technology. We've got live timing, and we've got live commenting, and we've got Twitter updates, and we've got all sorts of things on the go. And we've also got the McLaren, what they're calling the 1.0B live data system, and we could see from there. You get the radio calls, you get action from the pit wall as it happens, and you could see from that readout that Jenson Button said, "I'm coming in for tyres." And there was no communication from the pit wall to say, we think you should do this. He was out there. He made that call. He said, I'm coming in. They said, okay, the tyres are ready for you. Box this lap. Come in. It's all down to you, Jenson. He was in a strong position when he made that call. He wasn't last. It wasn't like, okay, well, I've got nothing to lose. Let's go for it, which was the position Fernando Alonso was in. Fernando Alonso could throw caution to the wind. He had nothing to lose from where he was. Jenson Button was still in a great position. And Lewis Hamilton didn't make that same decision. He had the same car. He was one place ahead. He could have made exactly the same choice at exactly the same time, and he didn't have either the confidence or the knowledge or the wherewithal to do it, and Jenson did. And he said, I'm doing it now, and that decision won in the race.
The funny thing about the McLaren race dashboard is it told us that Button made the call when he did, and you could see that happening. But it didn't show us the bit where Lewis was swearing at everyone over the radio. I think it's all about the positive.
It's the selective McLaren data system, is it?
Yeah.
So we found out, Lewis was complaining on the radio and it came through via the world feed.
Yeah, he said, who chose this strategy? It's not working. Or words to that effect.
Yes, maybe slightly stronger.
Yeah.
That never transpired on the McLaren live timing system. And you can still read it. If you go to mclaren.com/home, I think you can read it, the transcript, the full transcript on their website. And you should do that because you get to see all the positive stuff, as you said at the start of the race. It's all sweetness and light and everything's good. And as soon as it gets nasty, it all goes a bit quiet.
Hamilton wasn't having a good day all round, though, because he wasn't impressed with the strategy. And then Webber crashed into him for no reason, really. I mean, Webber said that he lost grip into the corner or something and just went flying into him. It didn't look like that to me. It looked like he forgot to brake.
Did he say the front wing lost all downforce at that point?
Something
he
like
couldn't
that.
Do anything about it. He was ragged, I would say.
Desperate to win?
Desperate to make amends, possibly. Yeah, I don't think he was...
Prove himself against his teammate too, maybe.
Yeah, I think that too. The crash into Lewis, was it a racing incident?
Well, he was reprimanded by the stewards afterwards, so not anything to be punishable.
No, at least the stewards had something to do, though. They've been quiet for two races.
It's interesting that now they've got former drivers on board, or not even F1 drivers on board in this case, to help with the stewarding process. There haven't been any penalty calls now, that may be because we've had two relatively safe races. But it might be because the drivers are saying, no, that is a racing incident. Mm. Maybe they're actually talking some sense.
I think you might be onto something there. I would say in the past, a few of those incidents, the message would have come up at the bottom of the screen. Incident to be looked at after the race.
At least be investigated.
Yes, and we'd have watched the podium thinking, well, what are the final finishing positions? Because we just don't know. And at something has changed, definitely, for the better. And if that's what having drivers on board does, then I'm all for it. And I only wish we could have had it sooner.
So it was a really, really good race. But everyone is now like, well, that proves it. Bahrain was just a one-off. We don't need to worry. F1 is safe. I don't think so.
You're not buying it.
No.
Because?
Well, there were three things that made the racing good today. One is that there were drivers out of place, mm-hmm. like Alonso and Schumacher. Mm-hmm. Two is the changeable conditions. Mm-hmm. It was raining and then it wasn't raining. Mm-hmm. And three, there were loads of incidents and retirements and non-reliability. Now, none of those things are tied to the refueling debate.
No. It
could happen at any race, or it could not happen.
It's difficult because we know from past experience that rain brings exciting races. It brings.
We know Australia brings exciting races.
Also,
so which, put the two together.
Yes, that's fine. It depends. I mean, there was calls after the last race by those in power to remain calm and to see how a few races pan out. Now, I'm expecting rain in Malaysia, and therefore I'm expecting an interesting race based
rain
on
or
rain.
A monsoon.
Monsoon, probably. It's a late start. It will probably be half points. It will no doubt annoy you for the rest of the season.
God, not again.
Therefore, Malaysia should be fine. Following that is China, and there's every chance it might rain in China, and then we'll be okay. If we can get past those two races with incident-packed, wet racing, then we'll be okay, because we'll get to Spain, and then there's a chance that new aero parts will be put onto cars, and the order might shift, and that will be fine. Spain will no doubt be incredibly dull, because it will no doubt be bone dry, and the track never promotes any form of overtaking.
Even in this race, though, earlier you were saying that track position is essential. And that is what we've been saying this whole time, is that you need to be in the right place on the track because you can't get past. Even in this race, you're saying that. So
yes.
I think it still counts.
Even I mean, we had a brilliant race. I don't know if it's the best race of all time, but it was a fantastic.
That's what you said earlier.
It was a fantastic race that had everything. There was nothing missing. There was nothing more I could have asked for. And therefore, I'm in no position to stand and complain. Long-term thinking, I genuinely still believe Formula One is in serious trouble this year. I think there's a huge amount of apathy from the people in charge, the team principals. Was it Stefano just was discussing before qualifying, I think it was on the BBC, that actually what they're going to do, they're going to take their time. They're not going to jump to any rash decisions. They're going to have some nice Evian and some finely cut sandwiches, and they're going to discuss things in a calm manner. And what that says to me really is, we have no idea how we're going to fix this. We know there's a problem, and we are absolutely stuffed. The big thing, actually, after the race that I noticed was a couple of drivers, actually quite a few drivers, all they said in their post-race interviews, well, this happened and this happened, but, well, at least the fans had a good time. At least we put on a good show for the fans. And what that says to me is the drivers, at least, know that if they don't put on a good show, they may not have a job anymore. If it's got through to the drivers, it is out there and somebody is listening. And they're the ones in the position to do something about it. And if Mark Webber
is... No, they're not.
Yes, they are.
No, they're not.
They're driving.
After the last race, they all said, oh, we need this change. We need mandatory pit stops. We need all this. What came out of that? Nothing. Everyone just ignored them. They're not in any position to do anything.
They're having
a boycott of the grid.
Okay, sorry.
Because they want physios there.
Yes.
No one's going to change that. Bernie doesn't care.
No. Okay, that's not understood. I know where you're coming from. They're not in a position to change the rules or the regulations, but they're out there on the track. And
well,
if
they're all going to crash into each other just for our entertainment.
If push comes to shove, that might happen. I'm being naive, but if the drivers after the race are saying...
They don't get paid to crash into each other, do they? Well, PK did.
He crashed into the wall, in fairness to PK. He didn't crash into anyone else. He put his own life at risk, and that was his choice. The drivers are out there, and they are in a position to overtake. I like that the race ends, and the drivers are saying, well, I wonder what that was like to the people at home, because I really tried, and I hope I made a difference to people's enjoyment.
After the last race, we weren't in the mood for talking about it, really, were we? So we had loads of voicemails from our lovely listeners to tell us about the race. And we've got the same again this week. Now, I want to make this a regular thing. After the race, people should call us up, leave us a voicemail with their thoughts, and we can just run them one after the other as a brief little segment from the listeners.
You want a mini montage every race?
Maybe. The voicemail number is 0121 288 7225, or you can email me an MP3, christine@sidepodcast.com. And this is what you guys thought of the Australian GP.
Oh, hello, Side Podcast crew. This is Lee from the Formula One and Motorsports Archive. Excellent race today. Much, much better than Bahrain. More thundery blues and beige this time, which is kind of nice. Must congratulate Bernie on bringing the sprinkler system round. Wonder if he'll do it again for any of the other races. Just one to think about. Cheers.
This is Steve, McLaren fan, and I am over the effing and jeffing moon that McLaren are back to their winning ways. I'm wearing my rocket red victory shirt, as I have been doing ever since the race. If I'm honest, I wish that Lewis had won, but he still had a flipping good race. I'm glad that Jensen's settling into the team nicely, and it looks like they're going to be battling for both the drivers and the Constructors' Championships. One very happy McLaren fan, and also my McLaren fan blog team is up to number 17 in the Side Podcast Fantasy Races League. So a doubly good day. See you all later. Oh, in the comments. Bye.
Hi there. This is a drunk Indian fan from Mumbai. McLaren was actually the strongest team on the grid today. Red Bull was strong as well, but obviously they had reliability issues, and they were screwed up as well, I think, in his strategy. When you look at Hamilton, he actually screwed up because Hamilton screwed up. It was not because of the team strategy. Everything went to plan. Everything's all right. It's just that the fact that Hamilton was not able to overtake Alonso. Alonso had a good race. All kudos to Jenson Button. Anyway, McLaren was the strongest car. Red Bull was the second strongest. Red Bull had reliability issues. That's about it. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hi, this is Andrew calling about the Australian Grand Prix. A fantastic race today, and a little bit of a return to form for Formula One. I was excited when the lights went out in Bahrain last week, but something about this race just didn't seem to work. And I know that there was a fantastic guest post by Stephen Roy on the site, which is talking about all kinds of different things, especially the fact that they changed the circuit configuration on the track. One of the things that's important to me is that Stephen was saying in that post that it was really clear that there is a distinction between a sport and an entertainment. But I think there's another element, which is, of course, Bernie Moneybags Eccleston, and the way that he likes to run his sport is to make as much money as possible. And what I think is weird is that there is an element to the sport which requires good circuits, but there's also an element which, once you've accepted those circuits, which we have, we've gone out and made a world championship, we're trying to anyway, and going to lots of different places and doing lots of different things, which is good, a good thing. Is to say, well, hold on a minute, we need to also show people and bring people into the sport, and that needs to be entertaining. So to my mind, one of the biggest problems we face with these circuits is if they're untested, if there's been a change, there's been some change to the configuration or something like that, then they shouldn't be the season opener or closer. Certainly a first race shouldn't be a closer like it was last season. We don't know what it's like. We don't know how it's going to work. I'm not saying that the race doesn't necessarily deserve to be in the sport, or it doesn't deserve to be in the season. But I think it's quite dangerous for the entertainment value of the sport to put them in such prominent positions. The opener and the last few races that should be dominated by tried and tested circuits, and circuits can graduate into those positions in the calendar if that's the way that things need to work. Anyway, that was my thoughts, and thanks for that. Love the podcast as always.
This first message is from Miles, who says, "Hi, Christine and Mr. C. I just wanted to tell you about an interesting event I was at today," which was actually quite a while ago, "at Queen's University. I'm interested in doing mechanical engineering, and I'm just doing my AS levels now. I heard about this through my school. It was a guy called Dr. Kieran Branny, who works for Mercedes High Performance Engine, who make the F1 engines. It was really interesting hearing about the lengths they go to test the engines, etc. For example, they have a piece of machinery which produces air exactly like it is in Bahrain, just to see how they can maximize the engine performance for the race. He is the engine engineer and was the main engine man for Heikki Kovalainen at last year's European and Belgian GPs. He also informed us he's been lucky enough to bump heads with Lewis Hamilton." I'm assuming not literally. "He also told us that they are already researching for new engine regulations to be introduced by the FIA for 2013, which will reduce the capacity of the engine, but they will be allowed to use turbochargers. Not sure whether you have heard anything about this, but it was news to me. Finally, David Coulthard is taking his Red Bull around Belfast this Saturday, the 20th, for a demonstration, so I'm very excited. Anyway, keep it up, guys. Miles. And then he emailed me back later with a couple of links from video he took of the Coulthard show, which I'll put in the show notes.
Good stuff. Thank you, Miles. And good to see that Coulthard's out there giving something back.
He remembers how to drive.
Did he? I don't think he ever knew how to drive. No, he remembers how to crash, probably. Yes, we are aware of this. This has been, it's come under discussion a lot in the comments on the side podcast.
The turbocharging.
There's talk that the engine regulations need to be revamped because they are so far out of whack with modern day road transport that it doesn't make any sense for engine manufacturers to be involved in Formula One anymore, because there is very little crossover. And so the idea is, let's make it more relevant. Let's make it more ecologically friendly. Let's bring in turbochargers back and things like that to make it more energy efficient and to consume less fuel. And therefore, the idea is they're going to start with a clean sheet of paper and hopefully make a better Formula One engine.
Next up, a message from Lisa, who sent me this after the Bahrain race. It says, hello to Christine and Mr. C. I just want to start by saying I'm so glad I found Side Podcast. I began listening at the end of January and I'm hooked. You have cured my longing for F1 news over the off season, and I've really been enjoying the show. Thanks. I joined the fantasy races and I've even tried Twitter, and so far seems quite good, if not a little confusing at first. Now to the reason for my email. Yesterday being Mother's Day, my first one, and also the first race of the season, I thought I'd be in for a real treat. I'd been given a new Jenson Button McLaren t-shirt as my gift, and I put it on and settled down on the sofa to watch the race. I'd watched the practice sessions on the Red Button, qualifying and all the build-up. The formation lap had been completed, everyone was lined up on the grid, and the five red lights were coming on in turn. That was the moment my 10-month-old son pressed the off button on the Virgin Plus box. I managed to get it back on in time to see the puffs of smoke coming from Webber's car, but I'd missed the start of the first race of the season. Unfortunately, that proved to be the most exciting thing that happened during the race. I thought it was so dull. It was just like the fuel-burning phase we used to get in quali until the end, where the drivers were so spread out, not a lot more could be done. Everyone was trying to save their tyres and use up fuel, and nobody seemed to be pushing at all. I thought this was supposed to be getting rid of the no-overtaking except in pit stops thing. Lewis still did Nico in the stops, and not a lot else changed until Vettel's car broke. I don't want to be watching a race in which the drivers are not pushing the cars to their absolute limits on the ragged edge. What do you think the solution might be? Whatever is decided, something needs to change, or the season that promised to be the most exciting in years will turn out to be the most boring, which won't do the sport any favours. What an anticlimax. Here's hoping it's fixed soon, Lisa Merrick.
I think that Lisa's 10-month-year-old was probably onto something.
He's doing her a favour, really.
I think he probably looked at that and thought, it's not going to be a very good race. Look what they've done to the track. Look what they've done to refuelling. You want to save your time and just switch the box off.
He's an F1 expert.
We could have done with a 10-year-old to come and switch off our box.
We don't know what the solution might be, and neither, apparently, do the top bods in F1, as we just mentioned.
I do know a man who does.
Do you?
Yes. As Alex mentioned on the voicemail earlier, Stephen Roy, the inimitable Stephen Roy, he wrote the best, what I would call the best guest post we've ever had. It might well be the most popular guest post we've ever had. Loads of comments, loads of feedback on his idea for fixing Formula One. And what Stephen suggested, which I don't think anyone else has really gone out and said, is that you can't just change one thing. You can't just bring back refueling, or you can't just say, okay, well, we'll fix one thing, or we'll fix that, or I think this should be solved. What he said was, actually, what you need to do is decide what you want Formula One to be, and then make a ground up regulation change and reconceptualize everything about Formula One. And he suggested on his post how he would do it, and many people agree, and many people disagree, whatever, you know, it doesn't really. I'm not saying Stephen has all the answers. What I'm saying is he's come up with a concept, which is, don't tell me one thing that you'd like to change. Tell me everything that works together in unison.
Yeah, his idea was you need to know what you want out of the sport and then work backwards from there. So yes, you need to start right at the beginning.
Tell me what you're going to do with the engines. Tell me what you're going to do with the aero. Tell me what you're going to do with the tyres and the refueling and this and this and this. And this will make up Formula One in the future. So in answer to Lisa's question, I don't know what they can do to fix it. Personally, I would rush refueling back in this year. I would still do that, even though it's expensive, even though it's not good for Formula One in an ecological sense and in the public's eye, and then I would take a longer-term look. The kind of thing that Stephen's suggesting that should be done, a 5-year plan to fix Formula One, but I wouldn't continue racing like we are and praying for rain week after week after week, which is what we're doing. We're praying for rain in Malaysia. We're praying China is wet.
Now, a return emailer. This is Simon, who we talked about before. He is traveling the world and trying to keep up with F1 as he goes. I think he's relying on us a little bit too much. But anyway, he says, Dear Christine.
Trust us. No. Dear not to be trusted. We don't know what we're talking about.
Dear Christine and Mr. C, thank you so much for the shout out during Piffle Sniffle Snuffle. I wasn't expecting it, and certainly not expecting you to read the whole thing out. So here is a little update. I was on the island of Koh Tao in Thailand by the time that the Bahrain Grand Prix came around. There was a pub on the island called Choppers that was showing both quali and the race using Ledyard Brundle commentary, so I got to see it. Yay-ish. I have since then been totally without internet and have only just today in Laos caught with the latest news and feedback from Bahrain. Did you read James Allen's blog, Getting Rid of Aero in F1, The Counter Argument? Because a lot of that rang true for me, wondering what you thought. Also, I am now not going to make the Malaysian Grand Prix as we are doing an Indochina-China tour for the next 3 weeks that finishes on the 8th of April. But I am hoping that from there we will head north and go to Shanghai. We'll keep you informed. So for Australia and Malaysia, I'll be in Vietnam and Cambodia respectively. So who knows if I'll have coverage or even internet access. Thanks again. Really put a smile on my face, and hopefully the next time I email you, I'll have something more interesting to say. Take care, Simon. I have to say, I really find it interesting following people around the globe.
Well, that works for me.
Yeah.
I like
updates
that.
Updates throughout the year, please, Simon.
Is it only me who's disappointed that somewhere as exotic as Koh Tao has a bar in it called Choppers?
Choppers isn't exactly what I was expecting.
I'm so disappointed that Thailand is like that. Choppers, the bar where you can watch F1. I did read James Allen's blog, Getting Rid of Aero in F1, and it was actually torn to pieces. It was torn to pieces on Side Podcast comments. So at first I was like, yeah, it seems like a really good idea. And then maybe seven or eight people tore it to pieces on the Side Podcast comments.
You changed your mind.
I'm just not smart enough to argue that, really.
More globetrotting, this time from Marcus, who says, Hi, Christine, it's Mark again. Last time I wrote from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. You got that pronunciation right. This time I'm writing from Poipu Beach on the beautiful island of Kaui, Hawaii. Holidays, you know.
Where?
This is so unfair. It was a long flight, so as usual, I saved three podcasts to help me kill time. Thanks, and keep them coming. There's a show on the telly that ends with the host dishing out some sarcasm on the nonsense of the week. That segment is called New Rules. So with shameless plagiarism, new rules, everybody. New rule, podcast hosts can't play the I don't know how to say it card anymore. There's Google, Wiki, Yahoo, etc. Even the Chinese have it. It's really easy. If a four-year-old can do it, so can you. How rude. New rule, F1 drivers can't complain about other drivers making the race dangerous. Have they been told they're driving at 200 miles per hour in an open cockpit car? If they want safety, do like us and watch the race on the telly. New rule, F1 drivers can't complain other drivers are too slow. It's a race. If they don't want competition, we can give them a medal at the beginning of the season and they don't need to be bothered with those slow, pesky drivers. Or maybe they should try drag racing. There's no one in front of them. That's all for now. I'll catch up with you on another long flight. Mark.
New rule, Mark.
New rule.
Don't be so blooming cheeky.
Letters need to be nice to me.
Oh, I love it. That's a new game. This is good. I can see that one. I can see that taken off in the comments. New rules. Right. Okay. So you did well with Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. But what I think you got stuck on Kaui, Hawaii.
Yeah. So did you. Moving quickly on, this is from PJ Heron, who says, Hey Christine, big fan, really appreciate what you guys do. Emailing you from the States, it's 3:55 in the morning, but I'm wide awake from this awesome race. Jensen showing he is still competitive is awesome, and a little unexpected this early in the year, honestly. Too bad for Vettel, when is this extremely talented guy going to catch a break? Good to see a karma bomb drop on Hamilton shortly after bad-mouthing his own team. Just too bad he took Weber down with him. I think it was the other way around, but... Schumacher being held up by Alguersuari for a better part of the race may have some people at Mercedes scratching their heads as he is outpaced by Rosberg the second week in a row. Great to see Chandok finish too, even if it was three laps behind. Take care and expect to hear from me after Malaysia.
Nice one. Thank you. Who was that from?
PJ Heron.
PJ Heron. Much appreciated.
And my final note this week. Hey guys, Rolando here again. Just wanted to drop in a couple of comments and a question. First, the Australia race was probably the best since the 08 racing season. Second, I was with the commentators scratching my head when Button boxed his car early for dry weather tyres, then chuckled to myself when he went off almost immediately, but soon ate my words and tipped my hat to him for taking a race-winning gamble. Now for the question. If Formula One and the FIA and FOTA are in support of cost-cutting measures, why not run the racing series in stages regionally, i.e. Asian stage, Mideast stage, Americas, etc. I know they run some together in the same general region. It would make more sense and make it easier for fans who like to travel with the sport. Perhaps this is a better question for Joe or Bernie, but your insight would be appreciated. One of your many American listeners and fans, Rolando!
That is a great question for Joe, and he's doing a live talk on Monday. So if we can get that question to anybody who might be attending, then maybe we can get a response from Joe as soon as possible. You're right. It does make sense to group races into areas.
I suppose, does it depend like when the circuits can hold it? Because obviously we've seen like them have to move it around when Australia were hosting something else.
Mostly, the cynic inside me thinks it's about money.
No.
Shocker. I know. I should have perhaps prepended that with a please sit down before I break this to you. And probably those who pay more can get first races or last races or whatever. That alone specifies where the calendar will be. Things like Valencia being on the calendar at all is all down to money and nothing to do with location. Bernie, sadly, doesn't travel to all races. Therefore, he doesn't know how hard it is and he probably doesn't care. He's probably interested in putting the races where it makes most cost effectiveness.
It is quite cost offensive.
It is cost offensive. It makes cost effective sense for him to move the circus around the world, and that's probably where it basically turns out. He says this is where we're going to have the races, and then occasionally people complain and say that doesn't make a lot of sense for us, and he has to change it. But mostly, the calendar is set by one man with an agenda, and it doesn't account for people who might be interested in following Formula One.
I suppose from the paddock point of view, if they're 2 weeks apart, it doesn't really matter. You've got to catch a flight. It doesn't really matter where it turns up to. You've got enough time to get there. I mean, we know that the more races there are, the tireder the people get. But if you're catching a flight, it could end up anywhere. When they're back to back, it's more of an issue.
Yeah, it doesn't make an awful lot of sense to go Bahrain, Australia, Malaysia, China. I'm not really sure how that works out. I mean, it's sensible, I guess, but you'd probably want to end up in Bahrain last. So you go Australia, Malaysia, China, Bahrain, Europe.
Working towards...
would make an awful lot more sense. But again, Bahrain wanted the first race of the year and they were prepared to pay for it and they got it. And to heck with everything else.
It's Malaysia next week, back-to-back racing. I don't know how you feel about Malaysia, geographically speaking.
I'll tell you what I'm excited for.
Yeah.
Team One Malaysia, their home race. Lotus.
Oh, them.
You don't know who they are.
I didn't know who you meant then.
What? They will have a huge, hopefully have a huge support in Sepang. It's where they intend to base the future of the race team. And therefore, it should be a massive homecoming for Tony Fernandez, for Lotus. I expect a huge, or I pray, I guess, for a huge turnout in support for the team. I'm really hoping they continue with the form that they showed at this race, and looking forward to it. It's happening so quickly. It's only slightly annoying that there was a 2 week gap between the rubbish race and there's a really short gap between the great race that we don't really have time to enjoy everything and take it all in. We're back on the road and there's another race to get under the belt.